This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Now we enlighten you with verses 162 to 165 of chapter Al-An'am from the Holy Quran, recited by Murtaza Fatemi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. قل إن صلاتي ونسكي ومحياي ومماتي لله رب العالمين لا شريك له وبذلك أمرت وأنا أول المسلمين قل أغير الله أبغي ربا وهو رب كل شيء ولا تكسب كل نفس إلا عليها ولا تزر وازرة وزر أخرى ثم إلى ربكم مرجعكم فينبئكم بما كنتم فيه تختلفون وهو الذي جعلكم خلائف الأرض ورفع بعضكم فوق بعض درجات ليبلوكم فيما آتاكم إن ربك صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Say, surely my prayer and my sacrifice and my life and my death are all for Allah, the Lord of the worlds. No associate has He, and this am I commanded, and I am the first of those who submit. Say, what shall I seek, a Lord other than Allah? And He is the Lord of all things, and no soul earns evil but against itself, and no bearer of burden shall bear the burden of another. Then to your Lord is your return, so He will inform you of that in which you differed. And He it is who has made you successors in the land and raised some of you above others by various grades, that He might try you by what He has given you. Surely, your Lord is quick to requite evil, and He is most surely the forgiving, the merciful.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Israeli forces once again attack Palestinians at the Al-Aqsa Mosque in occupied Al-Quds, leaving dozens of worshippers injured. The Arab League urges Israel to stop its ultra-nationalists from entering the holy Muslim site of the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in occupied Al-Quds. And Germany reportedly displaces hundreds of Afghan refugees to make room for Ukrainians fleeing conflict in their country. Hello everyone, and thank you for tuning in to World News. Now, tensions simmering in occupied Al-Quds, where Israeli forces have once again attacked Palestinian worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. So far, at least 43 Palestinians have been confirmed injured. Israeli forces made arrests as well. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has reacted to the latest attack on the Al-Aqsa Mosque. The movement said it is closely monitoring the situation and it is fully ready to respond to Israeli crimes against Palestinians. Hamas also called on the international community to restrain the occupying Israeli regime and stop its aggression against the Al-Aqsa. Tensions at the holy site began last Friday when Israeli forces attacked Palestinian worshippers, injuring scores of them. The aggression is taking place during the fasting month of Ramadan. And earlier we reached out to our Ramallah correspondent Mona Kandil to get some more details about the latest Israeli attack on the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Here she is.
Well, first of all, we can say that it's a clear Israeli intentions are to keep Palestinians away from the Al-Aqsa Mosque and to prevent Muslim Palestinians of freedom of worship inside Al-Quds and the Al-Aqsa Mosque. What happened this morning is that Palestinian worshippers entered the Al-Aqsa Mosque and its complex in order to perform the morning prayers. Hundreds of them preferred to remain in the Al-Aqsa Mosque and not to leave it. They were chanting when Israeli forces raided the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex. They were chanting Allahu Akbar, Allah Great, and they wanted to remain there because it's a Friday. and they want to remain there in order to perform the Friday prayers. They were thinking that in case they left the Al-Aqsa Mosque and its complex, the Israeli soldiers might not allow them to return back to the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex. That's why Israeli police raided the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex, attacked the people. They fired tear gas, rubber-coated bullets towards the worshippers, and tried to force them out. As you have mentioned, a number of Palestinians have been wounded.
And now joining us from Ramallah for more on the story is Mr. Saeed Nimr, professor of political science from Birzeit University. Professor, please explain why you have settlers on the Al-Aqsa Mosque premises while Palestinians cannot pray in peace during the fasting month of Ramadan.
Yes, since the beginning of Ramadan, there was lots of atrocities by the Israeli police and the Israeli army against the Palestinians, especially in Jerusalem. Not only in the Al-Aqsa compound, but in all of Jerusalem, and the roadblocks which was installed around the city to prevent Palestinians from reaching Jerusalem, especially Palestinians coming from the rest of the West Bank. To reach Jerusalem and to prevent them from doing their prayers in Al-Aqsa Mosque. However, it happens that the Hebrew feasts are at the same time in this week. Last week was at the same time, so the settlers were intending to get in thousands into Al-Aqsa Mosque, and they were also preparing themselves, and they declared that so clearly that they are going to do sacrifices inside the Al-Aqsa Mosque, which is definitely would offend not only the Palestinians but all the Muslims, because of this is a holy site for only the Muslims. So the Palestinians were also prepared to defend the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And ever since, the Israeli army and police, they are allowing the settlers to get into Al-Aqsa Mosque every morning at 7 o'clock in the morning till 11. And at that time, they don't want any Palestinian to be inside Al-Aqsa Mosque. And you know, when we are talking about Ramadan, usually people do stay, especially after suhoor, after the prayer in the morning, and they stay in the Al-Aqsa Mosque all night long. And the Israeli didn't like that at all, because in the morning they are intending to bring the settlers inside Al-Aqsa Mosque. So because of that, they try to get all the Palestinians out of Al-Aqsa, and the Palestinians insisting in staying in order to protect Al-Aqsa Mosque and to prevent the settlers of doing any you know, odd things like sacrifices or prayers inside Al-Aqsa Mosque. In the last Friday, it was hell for everyone, because you know, we know that there was more than 500 arrests and more than around 200 were injured. And in the five executive day after last Friday, it was on a daily basis. The Israeli bring those settlers in the morning, and definitely every day there was a kind of a clash between the Israelis and the Palestinians. Yesterday, it was one of the hottest days in the last 5 days, where around 30 Palestinians were injured. Two of them were in critical conditions, and many arrests also happened, not only in Al-Aqsa Mosque, but also outside Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem, the old city of Jerusalem, because the Israeli settlers, they wanted to have this kind of a flag demonstration, as they call it, and they wanted to enter the old city of Jerusalem, which they usually do every year. But last year and this year, they were prevented. Last year, when the war started, the Al-Aqsa Sword, this year it was also the Palestinian defending Jerusalem. They prevented them from entering the old city, as well as what happened by the Palestinian resistance in Gaza, whether it's the Islamic Jihad and Hamas and the rest of the Palestinian resistance movement in general. They threatened that if this demonstration go into Al-Aqsa Mosque or to the old city of Jerusalem, they will retaliate and they will, won't allow it at all. At the same time, they were threatening also the Israelis of continuing of the incursions and the entering the settlers into Al-Aqsa Mosque, especially in the last 10 days of Ramadan, which is very sacred for the Muslims. So now the Israelis were thinking again about it, and they declared that they are, after this Friday today, they will stop all kind of incursions into Al-Aqsa Mosque. And that came because the Palestinians' resistance just give them this kind of red eye, if you like, and that they are not going to tolerate or to allow this to happen. I think that now the Israeli learned that the Palestinians are standing still, and they are also resisting all kind of atrocities against Al-Aqsa Mosque, and they will defend Al-Aqsa Mosque in all ways that they have in their hands.
Thank you, Professor. Pleasure to have you on. Stay safe, sir. From Ramallah, Professor Saad Nimr joining us. Meanwhile, the Arab League has broken its silence on the recent Israeli violations at the Al-Aqsa Mosque. The League said Israel must stop restricting Muslims from worshiping there while allowing ultra-nationalist Jews to enter the sacred site. The organization said Israel has broken the status quo and is now allowing Jews to pray at the compound under police protection. In the statement, the League called on Israel to stop this practice. It also warned that a flagrant affront to Muslims risks a cycle of violence and threatens stability in the region and beyond. Now, the statement follows an emergency meeting of the League in which member states discussed illegal Israeli policies in Al-Quds. Human rights activist Firas al-Najim says the Arab League statement does not bother Israel much and that the organization needs to take real action to punish a regime for its crimes.
This statement doesn't really do much. I mean, there's probably some pressures, from different nations, different organizations pushing on the Arab League to, declare something, say something, because, the attacks against the Palestinians is continuous and it's daily now. And every day, they're provoking the Palestinian worshippers, the women, the men, and they're shooting them with tear gas and, arresting people. The Arab League, I mean, what have they done? Why don't they impose sanctions? I mean, why don't they impose their own sanctions? Why don't they work on putting pressure on these Arab regimes to, cut relations with Israel, to, make Israel really feel that there is, some kind of punishment for what they're doing. I mean, this, what is a statement going to do? Israel doesn't care about any statements. The United Nations has been issuing statements for many years without actual action against Israel, without actual severe sanctions or anything. And Israel feels like they have a green light to do and commit any crime or any violation.
In the run-up to International Quds Day, a UK-based rights group is calling on supporters of the Palestinian struggle to lift their voices in support and solidarity. The 2022 edition of Fly the Flag for Palestine campaign is an opportunity to remind Palestinians living under occupation that they are not alone. Amina Taylor has more.
Violence, oppression, and desecration of holy sites. Just more of the Ramadan reminders that Palestinians continue to live under occupation and suffer daily injustices. More than ever, international solidarity, especially in an age of social media, is important. With the atrocities being committed against Palestinians, raising awareness and exhibiting support is more crucial than before. This year's Fly the Flag for Palestine campaign is giving millions across the world the opportunity to show solidarity by displaying a Palestinian flag in person or online.
If we are not able to stand up at this hour of need and be supportive to those Palestinians by holding a flag on our car, on our shops, on our homes, then what are we good for? And when are we going to do this? And I think what I have seen, ordinary people responding so fantastically.
In the lead up to the annual Al-Quds rally in the British capital, the global support for the campaign is in full swing.
Organizers are encouraging participation in this year's event, and taking part could not be more simple. First of all, please post your image or your footage online. Encourage a few friends to do the same. And of course, use the hashtag. As the global solidarity movement grows, so does the opposition. A fact not lost on pro-Palestine campaigners.
We got ministers coming and saying, you know, they're going to refer us to the police for saying from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. It's outrageous. These are the same people that actually articulate that freedom of speech is absolute. And, you know, they go on and on. What's wrong with any part of the world to be free? What's wrong with asking people to be free?
So organizers are urging you to do your part. Lift your voice in solidarity and fly the flag for Palestine. Amina Taylor, London.
Britain's parliament has passed a motion which authorizes a probe into potential lies told by the Prime Minister in the case of COVID lockdown breaches.
The question is, as on the order papers, many of that opinion say aye.
Aye!
On the contrary, no. I think the ayes have it. The ayes have it.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Boris Johnson will now be the subject of a probe by the Parliament's Privileges Committee, which will begin work after London police are through with their inquiries. The committee has the authority to sanction or suspend the Prime Minister if he is found guilty of misleading Parliament. Earlier, Tory MPs scrambled to find a way to block or delay the inquiry through an amendment, but in an unexpected reversal, they pulled that amendment off the table. British police have already fined Johnson for breaking pandemic rules by holding illegal parties at his office and official residence, and the opposition is still calling for his resignation over the so-called Partygate scandal. Germany has reportedly displaced hundreds of Afghan refugees to make room for Ukrainians fleeing conflict. Now, a report by U.S. media shows the government in Berlin has told Afghan refugees there is no alternative since Ukrainians need a roof over their heads. Now, the Afghan refugees say social workers came with eviction notices, giving them just 24 hours to vacate their homes. The Berlin Refugee Council has expressed concern over the government's biased treatment of these refugees in the past few months. Social workers have also voiced frustration over the treatment of Afghans, as well as West Asians and North African refugees in Germany. In 2021, some 12,000 Afghans arrived in Germany after the Taliban's takeover. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says the devastated port city of Mariupol continues to resist despite Russian claims to have captured it. Zelensky said that in the south and the east of Ukraine, Russia is doing everything it can to exaggerate victories, but he added Russian forces will ultimately have to leave Ukrainian territory, and that is inevitable. Now, on Thursday, Russia said it had liberated Mariupol after weeks of besieging the southern port city. President Vladimir Putin hailed it as a success for Russian forces. Ukraine is entering now its third month of its war. Moscow says it is aiming to demilitarize Ukraine and has intensified attacks in recent days. That amid the West also stepping up its military aid to Kiev. New data shows U.S. police have killed nearly 600 people during traffic stops since 2017, with such deaths continuing quickly this year. Data was released by research group Mapping Police Violence. They show that there are 97 deadly traffic stops in America in 2017. Figure continued to rise in the years afterwards and was at 117 last year. Now, this year alone, 22 such deaths were registered as of April. Data also shows deadly traffic stops mostly target black people. Latest such incident took place in Michigan earlier this month when unarmed Patrick Loyoya was killed during an encounter with a white policeman. His death added voices to calls for an end to U.S. police brutality against people of color. It also raised calls for removing armed police from traffic enforcement. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The Supplication on Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness. And I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heavens, and the bearers of thy throne, and thy prophets and thy messengers whom thou hast sent out, and the various kinds of creatures thou hast brought forth, that I bear witness that thou art Allah. There is no God but thou, thou alone, who hast no associate nor any equal, and thy word has no failing nor any change. And that Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, is thy servant and thy messenger. He delivered to the servants that with which thou charged him, and he struggled for Allah as is his due. And he gave the good news of the truth of reward, and he warned of the veracity of punishment. O Allah, make me firm in thy religion as long as thou keepst me alive. And make not my heart to swerve after thou hast guided me, and give me mercy from thee. Surely, thou art the giver. Bless Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, and make me one of his followers and his partisans, and muster me in his band, and give me the success of accomplishing the obligatory observance of Friday, and performing the acts of obedience which thou hast made incumbent upon me within it, and receiving the bestowal which thou hast apportioned for its people on the day of recompense. Thou, only thou, art the mighty ones.
Ramadan, the month of opportunities. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful, salam and welcome to the program. Ramadan is the breeze of God's mercy. Many understand the fact that life without this blessed month would be spiritless and frosty. Ramadan is the month of worship. Worship is the way to be the good servant of God. This is the ultimate goal of creation. If one worships God honestly, he will seek help only from him. It is said in the Quran, "Does not Allah suffice his servant?" No doubt, God has power over all things. Thus, even if we call the prophets and imams, in fact, we ask them to intercede for us as they have high status with God. It is a Quranic principle to seek the means of recourse to Allah. This is clearly mentioned in Ayah 35 of Surah Ma'idah. In view of this, we take recourse to the pure and good servants of God while trusting in Him for our problems. In this part of the program, let us touch upon the laws of fasting for travelers. A person who travels in the blessed month of Ramadan should break his fast if he shortens his daily ritual prayer. In other words, if his journey makes him shorten his 4 rak'at prayers into 2 rak'at ones, he cannot fast any longer. Most of the jurisprudents say that this distance is 4 to 5 kilometers after the last buildings of the city of residence. However, if he travels the distance while intending to stay at least 10 days in the new place, his prayers are complete and he cannot break his fast. A person whose job is traveling or has to stay somewhere for a long time to study, his prayers are complete and he should fast. If a traveler arrives in his birthplace before noon, he should fast provided that he has not done anything which nullifies the fast. But if he arrives in the afternoon, he cannot fast. Meanwhile, if a person leaves his birthplace in the afternoon and goes more than 4 to 5 kilometers from the city, his fast is correct. But if he leaves in the morning, his fast is nullified. This distance of 4 to 5 kilometers is called Hadd Tarakhus. It is the distance when the last buildings of the city are no more visible or the sound of azan or call for prayer cannot be heard. The point to note here is that the traveler cannot break his fast until he reaches the mentioned distance. Therefore, he cannot eat breakfast or anything else as soon as he decides to travel more than 4 to 5 kilometers. Dear listeners, you may have heard this ayah of the Quran. Call me so that I answer you. Here God has guaranteed that he will answer the call of his servant. It has been mentioned in many narrations of the Prophet and the infallible Imams of his progeny that no prayer is left unanswered if the caller appeals to God sincerely and with pure intention. Yet, this does not mean that whatever we ask God, he will give us at once. God is wise and has created the world wisely. He knows what is good for us and what is bad. May things that we ask God are not to our benefit. Here, God postpones fulfilling our call. In another hadith, it is said that God does not meet the servant's call because he has saved for him much better than that in paradise. Anyway, praying and supplicating while fasting is highly recommended because the servant is closer to God. The Prophet's seventh infallible successor, Imam Musa Kazem, peace upon him, says, "The prayer of fasting person is accepted at the time of iftar." As you know, iftar means breaking the fast. Imam Kazem, peace upon him, would use any opportunity to pray and worship God. He was imprisoned at the dungeons of the Abbasid tyrants for at least 7 years. Some historical accounts say that he was imprisoned for 14 years. Imam Kazem spent these years in shackles and chains, but he never forgot to pray and supplicate. He would seek help from prayer and fast as it the Quran recommends. The jailer of the prison in Basra said, "I tried to listen to Imam Musa Kazem's prayers. He would just ask God for mercy and forgiveness and used to repeat these words. My God, you know that I had asked you to grant me a quiet place for worship. Now I thank you for preparing such a place for me."
This is the Heart of Life pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Midstream.
Events have been escalating in the occupied Palestinian territories for several weeks now.
They began with a series of individual commando resistance operations carried out by Palestinian youths in different areas in Beersheba, Khdeira, and Tel Aviv, and caused a great shock and confusion in the Israeli security and military circles. This escalation was accompanied by political tremors in the structure of the Israeli coalition government led by Naftali Bennett after the withdrawal of the head of the Israeli Yamina party, Idit Silman, which makes the coalition on the verge of collapse at any moment. The gradually escalating Palestinian scene for weeks has taken on more interesting forms, with the increasing state of systematic Israeli incitement against Islamic sanctities, especially towards Al-Aqsa Mosque, and the Zionist settler group's announcement of their intention to slaughter sacrifices in the courtyards of Al-Aqsa Mosque in a move aimed at imposing a new reality in preparation for the demolition of the actual Al-Aqsa Mosque and the building of their alleged temple. The unity of the Palestinian resistance factions politically, militarily, and on the ground, with the threatening language they launched from the Gaza Strip, made the office of the Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett issue a statement denying the intention of the settler temple groups to slaughter sacrifices during the next 7 days of the so-called Jewish Passover. This explains the Israeli fear of a repetition of the scenario of the Sword of Al-Quds battle, whose memory still terrifies the Israeli occupation and its leadership, which suffered a catastrophic failure in the face of the resistance, its steadfastness and its courage in its fight to defend Al-Aqsa Mosque last year. The excessive brutality of the occupation's behavior towards what is happening in a state of massive revolution in all Palestinian areas reflects a state of hysteria, shock, and intense confusion among the occupation's authorities. In order to understand this confusion, it is necessary to understand a set of premises, as the state of confusion is not caused by an Israeli failure in the security and military tools in confronting the revolution of the Palestinian people. Rather, it indicates the erosion of the plans and the failure of the theories and policies that were applied to the Palestinians and which Israel bet on during several stages in the last few years. These are sequential stages, the first of which is the so-called Operation Defensive Shield carried out by the Israeli occupation forces in Jenin camp in 2002. Then the stage of the outbreak of the Al-Aqsa Intifada, and later the stage of the Palestinian division and the tightening of the iron security grip on the resistance in 2007, ending up with the stage that we are witnessing today, which is considered the most important in all previous stages, as the city of Jenin is once again at the forefront of the resistance scene as a starting point for Palestinian military operations against the temporary Israeli occupation. Welcome to the Middle East Stream, I'm Marwa Osman. Dozens of worshippers were injured on Friday morning as a result of the Israeli occupation forces attacking them inside Al-Aqsa Mosque after thousands of people performed the dawn prayer in the chapels and courtyards of the mosque. The Al-Quds Red Crescent said that it had dealt with more than 200 injuries, including injuries that varied between rubber, sound bombs, and violent beatings and other means of torture. Meanwhile, the popular and armed uprising continues throughout the occupied West Bank in support of Jenin and its camp in a scene that does not seem to be receding soon. In addition to the decline in the strength of a Palestinian Authority, the surprising development of the capabilities of the resistance fighters in Jenin and the resistance of the jihad movement to defend and protect the families of the resistance fighters, the occupation authorities anticipate the possibility of a dangerous escalation in the Gaza Strip as well. To discuss these issues with us from the West Bank is Mr. Mohammed Jouadat, political researcher, commentator, and writer. Thank you very much for being with us, Mr. Mohammed. Now, the occupation forces assaulted women, elderly, journalists, and guards of the Al-Aqsa Mosque and broke the upper glass of the Al-Qibli prayer hall to shoot the worshippers. Do they ever learn? Do Israelis not realize that with such violence, they are just leading to more resistance?
This Zionist occupier is part of a historical system from the old ages. They do not learn because of their arrogance, their conviction that they are God's chosen people. Unfortunately, this stereotype in the Zionist mind, which was expressed by the Zionist movement with the creation of this usurping entity, is translated every day with brutality against the Palestinian people. Today, they appear on us by breaking waves and breaking inspiration. This Zionist mentality that invaded Al-Aqsa was arrested, beaten, shot, and broke the historical glass in the Qibla prayer hall in Al-Aqsa Mosque. This is a plan by Naftali Bennett, Gantz, and Lapid, a plan that they started preparing before Ramadan, at the beginning of Sha'ban. They went to Washington and said that there is an escalation coming in Ramadan. Some thought they meant a Palestinian escalation. Yes, there is a permanent Palestinian escalation, and it's part of the state of confrontation, favoritism, and self-defense. But these people have a plan now, which is to bring about a change in the rules of the status quo in Al-Aqsa Mosque. This settler Bennett, an ideological settler, wants to give a gift to the far-right settlers. He wants to tell them, I have presented to you what Netanyahu was unable to do and what Sharon, Rabin, and Begin failed to do. He wants to say that we have contacted the King of Jordan, the Palestinian Authority, and Egypt, and he will allow us to hold the blessings of our Easter blessing. In order for the settlers to occupy the roofs of the blessed Al-Aqsa Mosque for a period of 7 days, and then contacts will be established with Gaza and Ramallah, and no one is moving a finger, unfortunately, in facing this temporal and spatial change, as happened previously in the Ibrahimi Mosque, in order to allocate a place for the worshipping Zionists alongside the Muslim worshippers. And if this is tolerated at this stage, the future will be even greater, with the complete Judaization of the West Bank, unfortunately.
Well, Mr. Muhammad, thousands of Palestinians from the occupied 1948 territories and the people of Al-Quds have flocked the Al-Aqsa Mosque since the early dawn hours every day in during Ramadan to perform prayers in response to the calls of popular and religious groups to protect the mosque in light of what you just presented and described about the temple groups, quote unquote, who want to storm the mosque and bring about or perform slaughter offerings inside of it. It seems things will only escalate. How do you think will it look inside the interior 1948 territories if it were to spread in there too?
There are many changes happening with our 1948 territories in Al-Fahm and Nazareth and in Haifa. Yesterday, they raised in Haifa the banner, "This monster is an illusion of dust," a statement which was launched by Gilboa hero Mahmoud Al-Arda. In Nazareth, they demonstrated the day before yesterday in huge numbers. In Al-Fahm, there is a permanent sentimental presence of Al-Aqsa Mosque. There are whole nights spent by our praying people who come from all the seats of the Palestinians inside our occupied lands in 1948. And whoever is prevented from entering protects Al-Aqsa Mosque, just as happening yesterday, when entire buses from Al-Fahm were prevented from entering the Aqsa Mosque, and they chased after the settlers outside the wall of Al-Aqsa Mosque. The land of the 1948 were in full support during the Battle of Saif al-Quds, and today you find them guarding this mosque. It's not possible for all the regional and local powers, whether in Ramallah, Gaza, Amman, Cairo, or the axis of resistance, to rely solely on these Palestinians of the interior. These people, in the early morning of today, closed the doors of Al-Aqsa Mosque on themselves and launched a violent confrontation with the occupation to protect the mosque from the settlers, and most importantly, to protect the mosque from the occupation policemen who stormed the mosque by the hundreds in order to protect a handful of settlers. These policemen are the most dangerous because they enter the mosque heavily armed and pull a barrage of hatred and anger on the Palestinian worshippers.
Well, Mr. Mohammed, the Islamic Jihad movement in Palestine affirmed that the Israeli occupation's attacks on worshippers in Al-Aqsa Mosque are an aggressive crime for which the occupation bears full responsibility, as well as for its repercussions. Now, are we going to see another missile escalation, or this time the focus might shift only on internal lone wolf operations, which proved, by the way, to be very effective during the past month?
Jenin did what it has been doing since Sha'ban until Ramadan, and it has been in a state of confrontation for decades, especially in the past 2 years. A year and a half ago in Jenin, the occupation vehicles received nothing but permanent confrontation with all their might through these young men scattered in the alleys of the camp. But the brothers and the leadership of the resistance in Gaza, perhaps a political stance is required of them to cut off contacts with the Egyptian side and not to receive communications that turned out to have no function but to pass on the temporal and spatial changes that occur in Al-Aqsa Mosque. The summit of evil that was held at the tomb of Ben-Gurion 2 weeks ago, in which Egypt participated along with other normalizing Arab states led by the Zionist entity. The summit was meant to pass this change in Al-Aqsa Mosque. Therefore, what is required of the leadership of the resistance now is to search for options other than option of communications. There is always a third way. Today, for example, 10 vehicles of Zionist army entered Beit Hanun near Gaza. My point is, there are always ways to exhaust the occupier which he fears. The occupier wants reality to be either a truce or war. Yes, Gaza may have been thickened by wars, but what is happening now since Sheikh Jarrah in the battle of the Sword of Al-Quds and the great difference that the Sword of Al-Quds made in the situation inside Al-Quds, this difference is now intended to be blown away through silence, acceptance, and habituation. The habit of seeing settlers enter for 7 days during these alleged Zionist holidays in order to desecrate Al-Aqsa Mosque, while the police attack the worshippers, subject them to beatings, arrests, and impose exorbitant fines on them. Therefore, we ask the brothers and the resistance to make a political difference in their position, and then to stand firm and persist in its consequences, because staying in this current form lead to the Judaization of the West Bank and the elimination of the Palestinian cause. By pushing the approach of normalization countries that grovel to the occupation. For example, Erdogan thanked the Palestinian Authority because, in his opinion, it dealt wisely with the current developments in Al-Aqsa Mosque. What wisdom is Erdogan praising for suppressing hundreds of worshippers and inserting in their place a handful of Zionist settlers?
Well, it seems, Mr. Muhammad, definitely, it seems that we are looking upon several weeks of escalation if the violence from the Israeli entity continues against the Palestinian people. I want to thank you very much, Mr. Muhammad Shahradat, political commentator, researcher, and writer, for joining us to talk about the latest wave of violence from the Israeli entity against the people of Al-Quds and the people of Jenin as well. Thank you very much for being with us. Now, please stay tuned, because next, we will be talking about the upcoming parliamentary elections in Lebanon.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marwa Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
Well, despite the approaching date of the parliamentary elections in Lebanon scheduled for next May 15, doubt is what fills the air in Lebanon until the expected date, in light of historical experiences in which political forces cancelled previous merits under the pretext of security threats or regional and international external factors. The ruling elite is obsessed with the possibility of changing the parliamentary structure, and the pro-American forces are concerned and afraid of losing the race towards the parliamentary majority. All the while, this election session is witnessing a historically unprecedented boycott of the Future Movement headed by Saad al-Hariri, a boycott that affected the plans of his Saudi-imposed political allies. Skepticism in Lebanon in this following report.
Lebanon is preparing to hold parliamentary elections on May 15 amid a severe economic collapse that the country has been enduring for 2 years and the possibility of the country sliding into further deterioration in the coming months. Despite the extent of the economic, social, and livelihood collapse that Lebanon is experiencing, and the elections will also be the first since a nationwide popular uprising in late 2019 that sought to change the status quo of the government, it also comes after the explosion of Beirut port in August 2020, which killed more than 200 people and flattened several neighborhoods in the heart of the capital. Since then, the crisis has hit every home in Lebanon, with the collapse of the national currency against the dollar, the collapse of purchasing power, the rise in food prices, and even driving to work has become a burden for the Lebanese due to the soaring fuel prices. However, nowadays the trending talk in Lebanon is the parliamentary elections. This seems normal after the country has practically entered the month of merit, and thus the countdown to Elections Day has begun. Yet, what does not seem normal in the midst of all the preparations is the waves of skepticism whether or not the elections will take place on time. This skepticism, in which technical factors overlap, linked to electricity outages and strikes by university professors and judges, and political factors overlap, linked to the lack of enthusiasm and fear of results, which forced the President of the Republic, Michel Aoun, and the Prime Minister, Najib Mikati, to emphasize once again in the last cabinet session that the elections will take place on time and the necessary funds have been approved. A new scenario is being extensively reported about in the Lebanese media, claiming that Western diplomats are now openly talking about the possibility of no elections. Some even sought to promote that international community no longer wants the elections to take place after opinion polls showed big progress for the pro-resistance team, which, as per the opinion of many, called for a Persian Gulf breakthrough, leading to the hustling return of the Saudi and Emirati ambassadors to Lebanon last week in an attempt to adjust the balance of power with the minimum available means. Apart from the debate of whether or not the parliamentary elections will be held on time, the electoral process has become more intense in most electoral districts, and this has been evident in recent days through the high level of rhetoric and the exchange of accusations between various contenders. However, all of the above, according to what those concerned say, cannot be a fundamental reason that justifies postponing the elections or cancelling them, as the elections have become a fait accompli that can only be overridden in the event of a major external incident, a possibility that seems remote for the time being.
To discuss this issue with us from Beirut is Dr. Jamal Wakim, political commentator, author, and academic. Thank you very much for being with us, Dr. Wakim. Now, the question mostly asked at this time in Lebanon is, will the parliamentary elections be held on time next month, or will they be postponed, or worse, even cancelled?
First, good evening. I believe that there are a lot of possibilities. There is a possibility that the pro-American team or coalition in Lebanon might work to postpone the elections because they think that they will not earn the majority in the parliament, that Hezbollah and their allies will be able to have the majority. And this will spoil the American plan to impose a majority that will take random decisions, arbitrary decisions at the expense of Hezbollah and its allies. And that's why I believe that this team and the United States will work on obstructing or creating a situation where the elections might be postponed.
But I was following on your analysis of the situation, Dr. Wakim, in Lebanon, especially lately on social media in the past week, where you anticipated that not only the elections won't take place, but you also said that Lebanon might plunge into another civil war that will completely destroy it this time. Where is your pessimistic view, if I may, coming from?
Well, it comes from the intention of the United States to project the embroilment in Ukraine onto Iraq and Lebanon, because the United States was planning since a long time to transform Ukraine into a bleeding site for Russia, and at the same time transform Lebanon into a bleeding site for Syria, and Iraq a bleeding site for Iran. So based on this hypothesis, I concluded that the United States might either work to earn the majority, or for its allies to earn the majority in the Lebanese parliament. This way they will form, let's say, a one-sided government that will take arbitrary decisions against Hezbollah, and their logic will be, we have the majority, so let the majority rule and the minority be in the opposition. Of course, if this happens, or if the elections are postponed, then the parliament will lose legitimacy, the current parliament. There will be no presidential elections, and all powers will be concentrated in the hands of the Miqati, Najib Miqati government, which is pro-West and supported by the West. So in this case, Najib Miqati will take these arbitrary decisions. In the beginning, Hezbollah and its allies will try to absorb the situation, the tension, but they will be pushed, and Najib Miqati will keep pushing them until they react, and this reaction will project itself onto the street, clashes in the streets between the various parties.
All of what you're saying is based on the opposition, on the pro-American side winning a majority in the parliament. What if they lose?
It's based on them winning the majority or canceling the elections. Mm-hmm. Okay, if the elections happen, then most probably Hezbollah and its allies will earn the majority. But still, if they earn the majority, they will be prevented from ruling. The Americans and their allies will revert to collateral plans, or to contingency plans, so that they would be able to absorb the situation. And this, in case Hezbollah wins the majority, then we will see demonstrations in the streets after the economic situation gets aggravated. So if Hezbollah wins the majority, then we will see a deterioration, a further deterioration of the economic situation, increase in the exchange rate of the U.S. dollars, people suffering economically, starving, and then going into the street and blaming Hezbollah and its allies for not being able to resolve this situation. This is the American plan in all three cases. In case the elections happen and the pro-Americans win the majority, in case it gets canceled, and in case Hezbollah wins the majority.
But the people can see clearly who was behind the policies that brought Lebanon into this crisis, but we have Western-funded and backed NGOs along with Western-backed political factions that seem to be thrifty now when it comes to campaigning. They're throwing their money left and right. Yeah. Meanwhile, the working class is banned from withdrawing their savings and sometimes their own salaries, like what happened to me last month when I tried to withdraw my salary and they wouldn't allow me at the bank. they said it's been too long since you withdrawn, and it was just late 10 days since I withdrawn. How long do you think it will take for a real uprising against the ruling 1% to hit Lebanon?
Well, too bad. I believe that the pro-American team is using all it could in order to divert the clashes or the confrontation from being between poor and rich to being between a segment of the population and Hezbollah, and of course between the people themselves. So that's why I fear that we might face a situation where we have a civil war.
Well, that seems a bit scary, to be honest with you, Dr. Jamal, but this is what the case has been in Lebanon ever since the ruling class finished off with their civil war and entered with a disastrous financial situation in Lebanon. I hope for the best, and I hope for the best for you as well. I want to thank you very much for your contribution and for joining us to talk about what might happen next with the upcoming elections in Lebanon. And thank you. Please stay tuned next week for more from the Middle East Stream.
In the limelight.
Even before hostilities broke out, the CEOs of U.S. major weapons firms were talking about how tensions in Europe could pad their profits. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written jointly by William Harting and Julia Glitil, political analyst. This article is published under the heading Pentagon contractors seizing new gold rush to cash in on Russia-Ukraine crisis. Stay tuned, please, for the second part of this article. For U.S. arms makers, however, the greatest benefits of the war in Ukraine won't be immediate weapon sales, large as they are, but the changing nature of the ongoing debate over Pentagon spending itself. Of course, the representatives of such companies were already plugging the long-term challenge posed by some countries, a greatly exaggerated threat. Even before the war, the Pentagon was slated to receive at least $7.3 trillion over the next decade, more than four times the cost of President Biden's $1.7 trillion domestic Build Back Better plan, already stymied by members of Congress who labeled it too expensive.